All right. Again, I'm Tom Wininger, and like Chantal said, I'll be going into a little bit more detail about certain aspects of the process, including walking you through qualifying. But I'm going to start with talking about the contract for this RFP. There are separate supply master agreements for the full requirements RFP and for the block energy RFP. Now, the contract is standard for all suppliers. That means everybody signs the exact same contract. Contract is between the supplier and between PECO. NERA is not involved in this at all. The final agreements are non-negotiable. That goes along with them being standard for all suppliers. There's no opportunity to propose modifications to these or sign anything different than what anybody else signs. And speaking of signing them as part of qualification, any RFP bidder submitting a Part 2 proposal is going to have to sign the SMA and submit that with the Part 2 proposal. The credit requirements under the contract are based on standard mark-to-market exposure calculations. These calculations come up with a total number that is then netted against either accounts receivable or accounts payable to the seller. These performance assurance requirements will depend on a seller's credit evaluation that goes on during the qualification process. This, of course, incorporates criteria specified in more detail in the SMA. And the form of guarantee and the form of the performance assurance letter of credit, which will be used for the exposure under the contract, are provided as exhibits to that contract. I'll talk a little bit about rate translation now, determining the rates that customers will pay as a result of the prices determined in the RFP. The rates for the residential class default service customers are calculated on the basis of the prices determined through the RFP for fixed price default supply, also through the prices determined through the block energy RFP, and then through PECO's additional purchases in the PJM markets, such as spot energy, capacity, ancillary services, everything required for the full requirements products to serve the 25% PECO share of the default service load for the residential class. These are all calculated together for the residential class rates. Default service customers in the small commercial and medium commercial classes are determined only on the basis of prices determined through the RFP for fixed price default supply, and then also through the RFP for spot price default supply. Spot price default supply will comprise 10% of the rates for the small commercial class and 15% of the rates for the medium commercial class. If you recall those pie charts that Chantal showed earlier that show the different components. And there is a couple of additional components into the rates. One is a quarterly true-up that will take place, and then the other is the administrative costs of the RFP will also go into the rates. You can look at PECO's GSA tariff if you want further details on how these are calculated and built in. Yes? No, I believe they're not. No seasonal factors. We have actually already posted a rate translation spreadsheet. This is on the website, so you can actually type in prices from the RFP and get sample rates for customers based on certain assumptions. And the link for this is in the presentation. You'll be able to download this off our website later and go and look at the rate translation spreadsheet tool. This has tools for the residential, small commercial, and medium commercial classes. We have some shopping data on this slide, and this is also on our website. You can see for each of the four classes for which we're soliciting load, there you can see the total customers, the customers taking service from an EGS, and then just following those two numbers, the percentage of customers who are on an electric generation service. So this data is provided in the data room on our website, actually in greater detail here. It's broken down into individual strata among the rate classes. So if you go to the PECO data room at PECOProcurement.com, you can get this data and more. I'll now move on to talking about the qualification process and the bidding process. I'll go into greater detail here. First, a little bit more detail on the procurement schedule. We are again at the August 5th bidder information session. Chantal had mentioned to you a part one date when part one proposals are due. We actually have a whole window during which you can submit your part one proposals. It lasts a week from Tuesday, August 25th, all the way through Tuesday, September 1st. And then following that part one date, there is a part one notification date when you'll be informed as to whether or not you qualified. And then those who submit successful part one proposals, the part two window opens on Tuesday, September 8th and closes on Tuesday, September 15th. So there's another week in which you can submit your part two proposal. And during that part two window, we're going to have a bidder training session. What this means is that Chantal had mentioned the secure file transfer method by which everybody submits their bid submission spreadsheets. We will have a day during which you can get a practice password, send us a dummy file, get the hang of how the actual submission process works, and that way when it's actually bid day, you won't have any technical difficulties, we hope. So following the close of the part two date, the part two notification date comes on Friday the 18th, and then bids will be due on Monday the 21st. NERA then submits its final report on the results of the RFP to the commission on the 22nd, and the commission will turn around with a decision on the 23rd. So there is again the part one and the part two proposal. There is an abbreviated process that Chantal mentioned for returning bidders who qualified under the part one or the part two in a previous solicitation. Even though there is an abbreviated qualification process, everyone participating in the RFP has to actively submit the part one form and the part two form and all the associated requirements. So what we've got is, if you qualified previously, if you submitted a successful part one proposal, you can use the short part one form. So there are two forms on our website. One's the standard part one form, which anybody can use, and one is the short part one form, which you can only use if you submitted a successful part one proposal in the previous RFP, in the previous solicitation under the RFP. You'll recognize the short form right away because it has this red box on it that asks you if you submitted a successful part one proposal last time. And if you didn't, then you have to go and use the standard form. So we will be providing to you an initial status notification if you participated and were successful in a previous solicitation. This will tell you whether you had a complete part one proposal and or a complete part two proposal in a previous solicitation, and this will guide you as to what the requirements are for applying this time. Just a quick note, if you're changing the entity on whose financial standing you wish to rely, i.e. an RFP guarantor, then you can't use the short part one form even if you previously qualified. Sure. Bids are Monday.
I'm sorry, the bids are on Monday, but the part two notification, that's where it closes, the part two notification closes on the 18th?
The part two window is from the 8th to the 15th, so that's when you submit.
Plenty of time for deficiencies, all
right. Yes, plenty of time for deficiencies.
Gotcha, sorry.
Veteran over here. So I'll now go into detail on the actual steps in each section of the Part 1 form and talk about the requirements. And I'll differentiate here between the standard form and the short form and go through what the requirements are if you're returning or if you're new. So you'll see in the standard Part 1 form, pretty much every section will say complete all information in this section. There are no optional parts there. However, in the short Part 1 form, you'll often see an opportunity to confirm information that was provided to you in the initial status notification. So the initial status notification will have just in great detail what you provided to us last time and what we have on file for you. And so you'll have that next to you as you're going through the short part one form, and you can see that if it's the same, if everything is the same, you just check the box and move on to the next section. And if there's anything you want to change or update, then you can make those changes in the short part one form. So starting with section one, of the part one form or the short part two form, I'll be going through these simultaneously. They'll have the same requirements and then slightly different ones for returning bidders. So section one is contact information and representations. You'll have to give us the name and address of the bidder, the officer of the bidder. The officer that you name has to be someone who can sign the representations, who can sign the supply master agreement, and who has legal authority to bind the bidder. You can also name a representative of the RFP bidder as a point of contact. And you'll have to make certain certifications that the Part 1 proposal is accurate and will remain valid until 6 days after the bid date. So all the certifications have that timeline. Returning bidders have the option to confirm or update things like the name, the officer, and the representative. And certifications that the Part 1 proposal is accurate and will remain valid until 6 days after the bid date still have to be made, even if you're returning. Moving on to Section 2 of the Part 1, that's the financial requirements. You have to provide the name of the entity on whose financial standing the RFP bidder relies. This is the chance to name a guarantor if you're not relying on your own financial standing. You'll have to provide financial information for the entity that you name, whether it's yourself or your guarantor. And this is by way of a 10-Q, or if a 10-Q is not available, you'll have to provide other quarterly, monthly, or biannual financial information, along with an attestation from the CFO that it materially represents in all aspects the financial standing of the entity. You'll also have to provide credit ratings for the entity on whose financial standing you're relying. And historically, we've required printouts from the rating agencies for every rating that you name. New for this solicitation, those are now optional. Returning bidders will have the opportunity to confirm or update their credit ratings, so you can just check the box saying what you have on file is correct. And however, since new financial information will be available since the spring 2009 solicitation, returning bidders will have to update their financial information by giving us a new 10-Q. In Section 3, the section that pertains to the letters of credit, the guarantee, and the contract, we'll start with the draft letters of credit. I want to note here that the standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit has changed since the last solicitation. I'll go into detail on what those changes were. They are all improvements based on bidder feedback that we got. This is now the opportunity at this stage for both new and returning bidders to propose modifications to the letters of credit. So this is where you can submit to us a red line saying, you know, we want to make these changes to the letters of credit, or our bank wants to make these changes to the letters of credit. We turn these around within 2 business days. So the earlier you submit these changes, the earlier you'll get a response to these changes. If you're concerned that your Treasury Department or your bank is going to have issues with the standard form, then we encourage you to submit these forms to them as early as possible so that you can get them to us as early as possible. And like I said, 2 business days turnaround. And then...
And that's within the Part 1 window.
Yes, that's right. This is when you submit your Part 1 form, you submit these red lines along with the Part 1 form. So it's in that window. So once this process has concluded, once the window has closed and all proposed modifications have been responded to, all of the modifications from all parties who submitted them will be posted to the website in one unified document. So any modification that we approve for one bidder then becomes available on an optional basis to all bidders. So you'll be able to, after this process has concluded, download a document from our website that just lists every single modification that was approved for everybody. And even if you didn't propose it yourself, it is available to you and you can incorporate it into your letter of credit if you like. Section 3 of the Part 1 form also asks for information that we need to prepare the contract and the guarantee. The guarantee, obviously, when I refer to the guarantee as a requirement, it's only a requirement if you're using a guarantor. The independent evaluator takes information that you provide to us in the Part 1 form, and we use that to populate fields in the contract and the guarantee. And then what we do is we provide to you those documents after we've completed them with all of your information, so that all you have to do on submission is just sign them and send them back to us. There's nothing for you to complete. Along those lines, there are optional modifications to the guarantee here. Chantal spoke of the guarantee process, which has concluded already, but all of the optional modifications from the guarantee process before this solicitation, and also the guarantee process from the previous solicitation, are available to you on an optional basis. And since we're the ones preparing the guarantee for you, we will take the information that you provide to us in the Part 1 form, use that to make those modifications or not to the guarantee in the contract, and then provide back to you these documents with all the changes that you've elected. So that's what it means when we say we send you a personalized contract and guarantee. It incorporates all of your information and all the changes that you've elected. So I mentioned improvements to the pre-bid letter of credit that has changed since last time. There's really only two changes that we're talking about here, and these are based on bidder feedback or perhaps bank feedback. We got pushback on this word substantially in the pre-bid letter of credit. A lot of banks didn't like having that word in their letters of credit, so we changed the language a little bit so it doesn't use that anymore. Hopefully that alleviates some people's concerns. And there was also a slight discrepancy as to how we name the person who can sign for acceptance or rejection of amendments. Paragraphs 13 and 15 have now been harmonized, so they read exactly the same, and that shouldn't be a problem anymore. In Section 3, current default suppliers, i.e. if you already submitted a bid, if you won and you executed the contract with PICO, you don't need to complete the info for the contract because it already exists. However, all bidders, whether new or returning, whether they've won or not, have to complete the info for the guarantee if they're using a guarantor. And all bidders, new and returning, still have to confirm the information for the contract or update and elect their optional modifications, because even if you're a returning bidder, if you didn't win, then you haven't executed the contract. So we will prepare it for you again and send it to you. And you can see little pictures here copied out of the form where you can tell us whether or not you're an existing default supplier, and if you are, you can skip to the next section. And same thing here. If you can confirm that the information that was provided to you in your initial status notification is the same, then you don't have to provide it to us again. And this is just an example of what we're talking about when we talk about electing optional modifications to the guarantee. In the form, you'll see a whole list of optional changes. For instance, it'll look like this, optional change number 2. In paragraph 1, you can see that there's a modification made to it very clearly in red line, or purple line as the case may be. And you just check the box underneath it in the Part 1 form saying whether or not you want to elect the optional modification, and then we take all that information and we make the guarantee for you. Yes?
When does the initial status notification get?
That would be 10 business days before the date in which you have to first apply. I believe August 11th? Yes, August 11th. It will be released to you. Moving on to Section 4, there are regulatory representations that bidders make. I won't read them all out loud, but it's slightly different between the block energy and the full requirements RFP. All returning bidders still have to make that first certification up there. However, the other certifications are not required of returning bidders. And you'll just see that it's slightly different. The text in brackets up there only applies if you're a default supplier, so it's slightly different between the two. Section 5, there are some additional representations all bidders have to make. They have to certify if they're bidding independently of other bidders. They have to certify acceptance of the terms of the SMA. And they also have to certify acceptance of the terms of the RFP itself. Returning bidders will not have to make these certifications as long as the officer is the same officer that was named in the previous solicitation. If you're changing the officer, then the new officer has to go back and make these certifications. Section 6 and 7 only apply to bidders under special circumstances. If you're bidding pursuant to an agency agreement, then we need certain documentation from you, such as the agency agreement itself and a draft officer's certificate that you'll later have to provide in an executed form with the Part 2 proposal. The independent evaluator reviews these and determines acceptability. And it's best that if you're going to apply under one of these special circumstances, you can give us these documents at the Part 1 stage, and that way we can review them and make sure that they're okay, and so that you won't be given a deficiency notice when you submit the live documents at the Part 2 stage. Returning bidders, if you're a returning bidder, your officer has to recertify that he has or she has authority to bind the bidder, and the officer may also confirm that the previously submitted documentation is still current and up to date, i.e. the agency agreement and the officer certificates. Section 7 is for foreign entities, meaning if the bidder itself is incorporated in another country, or if the bidder's guarantor is foreign, or if an agency agreement has a foreign principal or anything like that. This section is optional if you're a returning bidder. However, it is the only time to submit draft documentation to us for review. As I mentioned, we'll review it at the Part 1 stage and make sure that it's good so that you know you're ready to go for the Part 2 stage. Section 8 of the Part 1 form is the blank for the justification of omissions. If there's any requirement of the Part 1 stage, the Part 1 form, that you didn't provide, then here is your chance to tell us why it's not in there. Anytime we get a Part 1 proposal from anybody, if it's missing anything, you're going to get a deficiency notice and then a limited amount of time to cure that deficiency notice. So if there's anything you're not giving or if there's anything you're worried about, here's your chance to tell us in advance and hopefully save yourself some time and maybe even a deficiency notice. And we always end the Part 1 and the Part 2 form with this. So as part of the Part 1 proposal evaluation process, there is a credit assessment, which I think I've mentioned now. The independent evaluator and PICO get together to determine the unsecured credit limit for the supplier or for the supplier's guarantor under the terms of the contract. And for this, we use the financials that were submitted in the Part 1 proposal, meaning the 10Q or the other form of financial statement and the credit ratings. And then once we complete this with the Part 1 notification, we give you the results of the credit evaluation. And you can go into the actual contract for the great details about exactly how this unsecured credit limit is calculated. I'll now talk a little bit just about the process for submitting these and the process that we use for going through these. The first step is that you send your Part 1 proposal in to the independent evaluator's office. We require that these are sent in hard copy. However, some documents may be submitted on a CD. However, email and fax are not acceptable forms of submission for any part of the proposal. We'll then evaluate submitted proposals for completeness and for compliance with the RFP rules. And after we complete that, we send a notification to the bidder by fax before 6 p.m. on the day of receipt, just an initial completeness notice, making sure that they've complied with every step of the procedure. So the complete notice means all the required information has been received. A deficiency notice means something's missing. There's something you didn't give to us that's a listed requirement, and we'll give you directions on what you need to give to us in order to not be deficient anymore, and we'll also give you a deadline. So step 3 is curing deficiencies. If you have a deficiency in your Part 1 proposal, you'll have until noon on the Part 1 date or until 6 p.m. on the business day after the deficiency notice is faxed, whichever comes later. And your deficiency notice will say exactly what the date is by which you have to remedy your deficiencies. If you're given a deficiency notice and you don't remedy the deficiency by the stated deadline, your Part 1 proposal can be rejected and you won't be allowed to submit a Part 2 or bid. So once all that's completed, step 4 is the notification of qualification, which was on the calendar after the close of the Part 1 date. The RFP bidder will be notified whether it's then qualified to submit a Part 2 proposal on Friday, September 4th, which, as I said, is a Part 1 notification date. So this is just a summary of the timeline here. August 25th to September 1st is the window during which you can submit your Part 1 proposals. September 1st is the last day of the window. We call it the Part 1 date. September 4th is the Part 1 notification date on which you're told whether you can submit a Part 2. And then Part 2 proposals are accepted during the Part 2 proposal window, which is September 8th to 15th. So as I said, on September 4th, you'll be notified whether you've qualified to submit a Part 2 proposal. Another part of this is you'll receive a CD with your Part 1 notification. And this CD will contain a number of things. One is the bid form. We talked about how you submit your bids by filling out a spreadsheet and submitting that to us using a secure file transfer system. We actually fill out that bid form for you with everything but your bid, obviously, and give it to you on this CD. And then you use that spreadsheet that we've given you to submit your bids to us. We also talked about how we customize a contract and a guarantee for you using information that you've given to us. These documents are provided to you on this CD with the Part 1 notification. So you'll get your contract and your guarantee if you're using a guarantee. And then you take the CD, you print out the contract and the guarantee, you sign them, and then you submit these documents with your Part 2 proposal. So for the contract, you need to sign two originals and submit those. And the same thing with the guarantee. And that's two originals for each RFP, Block Energy, and full requirements in which you're participating. I skipped over the instructions for bid submission in the first step. Along with the bid form, we also give you a sheet that has very detailed screenshots of how to go about submitting your bid form using the online file transfer system that we have. So it'll show you exactly what it looks like, so it's not new when you see it for the first time. We also give you, on this Part 1 notification CD, confidential information. And this is login information that you're going to use when you're using the secure file transfer system to submit to us your bid proposal spreadsheets. So there's the training day, and then there's the actual bid day. And you'll have separate login information for each of those. So on the practice bid day, you'll have login information. You'll fill out a spreadsheet with a dummy bid. It means nothing. And you submit that to us, and we confirm that we got it, and you know, you get familiar with the notification process that we have. And then the actual bid date, you use different login information to log in and submit your real bids. For returning bidders, you'll have slightly different CDs. If you're a current supplier, you won't have to resubmit the signed SMAs, so your CD is not going to have any contracts on it. However, returning bidders who haven't previously won still have to submit contracts, so your CD will still have those contracts on them. And also, all bidders using guarantor, whether they're returning or not, still have to submit new guarantees. So again, you'll have to print out the guarantee as we provided it to you on the CD, sign to, and submit with the Part 2. Now talk a little bit about the Part 2 proposal. Again, we have the Part 2 proposal window from September 8th through September 15th. We call the last day of the window the Part 2 date on which they're due. And unlike with the Part 1 proposal, where there was a short Part 1 form and a standard Part 1 form, there's only one Part 2 form for both new and returning bidders, so everybody fills out the same form here. And I'll just go through the sections of the Part 2 form somewhat quickly. Again, we have contact information where everybody has to confirm or update. And then there are some representations that everybody has to make, whether they're returning or not. And the Part 2 form is the stage at which you submit your executed pre-bid letter of credit. This is where the live one from the bank comes. So all bidders have to submit a pre-bid letter of credit for each RFP in which they participate, separate for block, separate for full requirements. For full requirements, it's $250,000 for each tranche you're bidding, and for block energy, it's $20,000 for each block you're bidding. All bidders have to use the standard form or the standard form incorporating only approved modifications. So I mentioned earlier that after all of the proposed modifications are responded to, we post a list of all acceptable modifications, and when we get the live letters of credit from you, we will go through them to make sure that they use a standard form incorporating only modifications that are on that list that we posted. In Section 3 of the Part 2 form, you have to give us the Supply Master Agreement. So again, current suppliers don't need to complete this section because they've already given us, or they've already executed a contract. However, all others, both returning bidders and new bidders, submit two signed originals of the contract with all of its exhibits. and the officer that was designated in the Part 1 form must be the person who signs these contracts when they're submitted to us. The guarantee, of course, only if you're relying on a guarantor. All bidders, whether current default suppliers, returning bidders who haven't won, and new bidders, have to provide the guarantee for each RFP in which they're bidding. If you already have a guarantee in effect because you're a current supplier and you win again, the new guarantee that you've submitted this time will supersede the previous guarantee, and then the old one will be returned to you once the new one is executed within 3 days. So bidders with approved alternate forms of guarantee must at this point provide executed enforceability opinions. That's a requirement if you're using an alternate form, that you submit to us a draft enforceability opinion. At this stage, it is then submitted in executed form. In the end of the Part 2 form, we have, again, the special circumstances. Bidders applying under agency agreements have to provide an executed version of the officer certificate. I mentioned that at the Part 1 stage. You give us a draft to make sure it's okay, and here we'll actually require the executed version. And we will review it for acceptability. And obviously, if you'd already been told that your form is acceptable, you don't have to worry about this stage. Section 5 of the Part 2 form is for foreign entities. This is only necessary if the bidder, the guarantor, or a principal to the agency agreement is foreign. Returning bidders have the option to confirm that their previously submitted documents are current or to submit revised documentation here if something has changed. And the documents we're talking about here are a legal opinion that the contract is binding and secretary certificates of authority. This is described in much more detail in the rules and to some degree in the forms. And Section 6, the last section, is the justification of omissions. This is the same thing as the Part 1 form. I didn't put another screenshot here. It's the same idea. If any requirement is missing and you know you haven't met it, then here is the place to explain it to us before we give you a deficiency notice. So the Part 2 proposal final decision stage. If you're qualified pursuant to the Part 1 proposal and you submit a successful Part 2 proposal, then you're allowed to submit bids. Each RFP bidder will be notified whether it's qualified to submit bids on the Part 2 notification date, which is Friday, September 18th. So you'll get a notification sometime before 6 p.m. Eastern on Friday the 18th. So that's it for the forms. I'll talk a little bit about bids now. A bid is just a price in dollars per megawatt hour, both for full requirements and for block. In the full requirements RFP, you name a price for a tranche of a product. And in the block energy RFP, you name a price for a 10 megawatt block of the product. Bids are automatically rounded to the nearest cent. You can't give us any more than two decimals here. These bids are binding until 6 days after the bid date, and they must be supported by sufficient security. So we talked about the pre-bid letter of credit. You can't bid more than you've secured using the pre-bid security. And I'll go through a little bit more detail about the bid submission process. We've mentioned before that you submit this using the electronic file transfer system. Like Chantal said, you'll be given a password. You log in to a website, we'll give you the URL. You upload your file. Once you've uploaded it, we get a notification on our end that you've transferred your file to us. We download it. If for some reason you have technical difficulties, there's a backup submission method, which is fax. You can fax your bids into us. We'll have people standing by ready to take backup bids and also standing by ready to answer any questions you might have. There'll be a hotline you can call during the bid submission window if you're having any trouble. Hopefully we can resolve any technical difficulties. If not, you submit your bids by fax, not disadvantaged in any way, but still subject to the same deadlines. The CD with the Part 1 notification that I've talked about will have your customized bid form and also instructions for submitting your bid. And again, there's a training session so you can practice using this whole method on Thursday, September 10th, and you'll be given more details about that later as well. So the real bids are due at noon Eastern on Monday the 21st. We'll call that the bid date. Once you've submitted your bid using our secure file transfer system, we'll call you directly and confirm that we've received it within 15 minutes of the time you upload it. We'll then review the form, and if there are any errors, if you've left out a field, if you've entered something invalid, you'll have until noon to correct them. We'll call you to confirm, and if there is nothing wrong with your form, we say your form's fine, your bid's in, we'll let you know. If there's something wrong with it, you have until noon to correct this. So there's not an extended cure deficiency deadline here. So if you submit something at 11:59 and there's a problem with it, you may not have time to remedy it before the noon deadline. So we encourage people to submit somewhat early here. We only guarantee receipt within 15 minutes of receiving it. So that's when you can count on us having completed our review of your form. And even if there's something wrong with it, you still have to get your replacement bid form in by noon. Following the submission deadline of noon, by 6 p.m. on that date, we will determine the winning bidders that we'll be recommending to the commission, and we will notify all RFP bidders of the decision. The final report is sent by NERA to the commission by 10 a.m. on the day after the bid date, and that contains our recommendation. So just a quick note on bid evaluation criteria, which is very straightforward here. I'll first note that we had mentioned before a 65% load cap. You can't bid such that you would be supplying more than 65% of the available load for each class. So any bids above that will be invalid. And then bids are evaluated on a price-only basis. We simply take the prices for each bid on each product, rank them from lowest to highest, until all bids are ranked, and then we take the number of tranches or the number of blocks that are needed in this particular solicitation and recommend those as the winners. This is a screenshot of the bid form so you can get an idea of what it looks like. Like we were saying, you only name prices here. So for each product, this is the full requirements bid form. You can see there's the residential 17-month, the residential 29-month, the small commercial and the medium commercial, and the number of cells for each is the maximum that you could be bidding. However, there may be different load caps for people who are currently serving tranches, so you have to be careful. And you just enter prices at the top here, and then the bottom of the spreadsheet has some formulas that keep a running total for you so you can keep track of your load caps. And that's the bidding process. I'll now talk briefly about the post-RFP process. Here's the schedule and the timeline for the commission approval and the execution of transaction confirmations. Wednesday, September 23rd is the expected date of the commission decision. So we give the report the day before that on the 22nd. They turn around with the decision on the 23rd. The independent evaluator provides information to PICO for completing the transaction confirmations. The day following that, the 24th, the independent evaluator releases the pre-bid letters of credit for losing RFP bidders, i.e. those who didn't win anything. And at the same time, PICO signs the contract and acknowledges the guarantee, if a guarantee was submitted. On the Friday, the 25th, PICO will sign the transaction confirmations and fax them to the winning suppliers, and at the same time, overnight originals of the transaction confirmations and the contract to the supplier. Then on the Monday following that Friday, the supplier faxes the transaction confirmations back to PICO after having signed them by 2 p.m. on that Monday, and at the same time, then overnights those executed transaction confirmations to PICO. And if any additional security is needed, PICO will inform you, and you'll have to provide that as well at that time. On Tuesday, the 29th, the independent evaluator will then release the winning bidder's pre-bid letters of credit, because at that time they will have executed the transaction confirmations and or the contracts, which is the requirement for the release of the pre-bid letters of credit. So following every solicitation, there is certain information that gets released to the public, and it's different for each RFP. In the full requirements RFP, we release the average winning bid price for each class, the rate impact for each class, the number of RFP bidders that qualified and the number of bidders that won, and also the number of tranches or that were filled. This was actually on an earlier slide. We replicated the information release from the spring 2009 solicitation. For block products, we release the average winning bid price for base load and for peak blocks. We also release the number of bidders that were qualified and the number of blocks of each product that were filled. Now, this information release happens 30 days after the last solicitation or 21 days before the supply period starts, whichever comes first. Yes.
The number of RFP bidders qualified to submit, is that the same as the number of bidders that actually submitted?
No, it is not. We do not release the number of bidders who actually submit bids, only the number who are qualified.
Tom.
Yes.
The notification of the results of the block product, there are some restrictions that are triggered when the number of blocks that were up for consideration are less than.
Yeah, that's right, it's 8.
And if I'm reading the language about that correctly, it sounds like when it is less than 8, and you have 7x24 and 5x16 up for consideration, you average the prices for the two different products, and that's what you release. Is that correct?
I believe it's separated by base load and peak.
It is.
Yeah, it's... We do it by type of block. So there were only 4 blocks last time, so nothing got released. This time there will be 8 blocks, hopefully, assuming all are procured, and that will trigger a release of this information about base load. Peak is handled separately.
And why is there no information released if it's less than 8?
That was a... part of the terms of the settlement, I believe.
Okay.
All right, and I will now just talk a little bit about the RFP website and kind of give you a roadmap for where to find stuff. This is intended to be PicoProcurement.com, the central repository for all information that you could need. We have all kinds of documents. We have historic load data. We have answers to questions that people submit. We post all of our announcements. We post a schedule. We have links for you to register for email updates, RSVP for info sessions, submit questions to us online. There's a schedule for future solicitations. And we also archive all of the documents that were posted online in previous solicitations on the archive tab. Yes.
Not this fall solicitation, but spring 2010. We have a winter peak and a summer peak.
Yes, there are two different types of peak products.
Those are less than 8 blocks.
Right.
So we will not be getting any information.
I believe that's correct.
Just want to make sure.
We'll put a clarification on that question.
Yeah. And so... just talking about the website a little bit, we have the supplier information tab. You can see the navigation bar is on the left here. So if you click on any one of those bold categories, you'll get the small categories under it. So under supplier information, we have the documents tab. And this is really where all of the RFP documents are posted. So at the top, you have the forms, which are the part one form, part two form, and the short part one form. The next little arrow points you to the guarantee process, where you can see we've already posted the list of acceptable modifications to the guarantee, and this is reproduced in the forms where you actually elect these. The rules are at the bottom. They're the actual full requirements RFP rules, and they're further down the page. It's not shown here. We have the block energy rules, and also further down the page that you can't see here, you can scroll down further than this, we have the contracts and all of the appendices to the contracts posted for you to download. And as Chantal mentioned, we have a new appendix here where it's the load cap examples. So So that's new for you to download on this page. Give some examples of how bidder-specific load caps are calculated in the case that a bidder has won something in a previous solicitation. On the FAQs tab, this is where we post all the questions that come in and their answers. You can view them in a number of ways. You can look at them by category. If you want to see just the credit FAQs, you can hit the button that says View All, and you'll just get a list of all of them. And you can also view the recent FAQs. We have a button for any FAQs that were posted within the last week. And just at the bottom here, you can see what they look like when they're posted on our website. You'll see the date it was posted and the categories that it's in as well. And of course, these are always posted with any information that could identify the questioner completely removed. So they're made generic in that way. We also have the announcements tab, where you can see the current announcements as well as announcements that were posted previously and may no longer be relevant. So what you have here is a set of announcements that's relevant to what's going on right now. And we also have a rates tab. You can download PICO's tariff filings. You can download a summary of the rate design for the classes in this RFP. And I had also mentioned a rate translation tool. This is what's known as the retail generation rate conversion model, where you can type in prices from the RFP and get a set of sample prices for customers that would result from those prices in the RFP. And this is for the three classes that are available right now. It has the residential class, the small commercial class, and the medium commercial class. I've also mentioned a few times the data room. This is where you can download things like historic load data. We have hourly load. We have peak load contributions, network service peak loads. There are customer counts that I showed you before. We have unaccounted for energy data, and there's more than this. There's also an additional data tab where we have PJM information, line items, and historical data. And then we also have a page of PJM links where you can get various information that is not hosted in the PICO procurement website. Then there's the calendar. You've probably seen a few slides on this already, but it's on our website. You can look at it anytime just by clicking on the calendar and then going to current, and it'll have the most recent or the current solicitation up right away. And then if you look at the bottom, there's also a document. If you click on all, you can get a tentative schedule for all future solicitations under the RFP for both block energy and full requirements. And an important thing to note here is that we have an archives tab where basically at the end of every solicitation, we take all the documents, all the things that were posted, move them to the archives, and then start fresh. So all of the documents that are posted are available going forward. And if you click on the archives tab, you can then see we save the announcements, the FAQs, and the documents from the previous solicitation. So there was only one previous solicitation right now, and you can click on those various items from the spring 2009 solicitation. It's all still there. And hopefully most of you know about our Ask a Question feature. We have a page on our website where you can type in a question, and you'll get an acknowledgement right away. We'll assign you a request number you can use if you're referring to it. And within 2 business days, we will turn around and answer to your question. So every Wednesday, once a week, we take the FAQs that were submitted in the previous week, and we post them all to the website. This way, any information that's provided to one stakeholder is turned around and provided to every stakeholder. And like I mentioned before, we will take out any information that could identify you from the question before we post it. And this is located under supplier information and then the Ask a Question button. So the address for submissions, which is relevant for submitting all of your Part 1 and Part 2 documentation, is here. This is where it has to go. There's a phone number to contact us, and you can have a fax number as well, which can be used for things like responding to deficiency notices and also for the backup in the bid submission process. And these slides will be made available to you after this presentation, so you'll have this address. And that concludes our presentation.